on Hollis Ave at the dark. When I seen a man chilling with his dog at the park, I approached him very slowly with my heart full of fear. Looked at his dog, oh my God, a ill reindeer. But then I was feeling good, the man had a beard and a bag full of Philly, 12 o'clock at near. So I turned my head a second and the man was gone. When he left, his driver's wallet smacked dead on the lawn. I picked the wallet up and then I took a pause. Took out the lights and then it cold, said Santa Claus. $1 million in it, cold hundreds of G's. Enough to buy a phone, match a car with ease. But I never feel for Santa, cause that ain't right. So I was going home to mail it back to him that night. But when I got home, I bumped, cause under the tree was a letter from Santa and the dose of me.
Yeah,
Merry Christmas. And welcome to the last episode of 8-4 Play for
ever.
This year.
Oh, just this year.
Episode 171. For those who are counting, I am your host, Justin J.J. Epperson. Welcome to the podcast that's all about games, Japan, and Japanese games.
Oh, you messed that up.
I always do, but actually...
There's no right way to do this, Graham. You can do it however you want.
I do whatever I want, because I'm the boss today, Graham. Shut the fuck up.
Where is Mark, anyway?
Where is Mark?
I think Mark's on, like, winter vacation or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess he's somewhere. Oh, no. He's out of town. He's not here. Okay.
That's what I mean. I think he's in the U.S.
That's right. So he's off doing something. I don't know what he's doing. But we're all here. Actually, Roy is also not here. Roy fled the country to go...
With his copy of Final Fantasy XV.
He was so excited about all the craft beer and pizza that he was going to be indulging in.
And you know he's just going to be in his house every day, all day, playing Final Fantasy XV.
Fishing. Nothing but fishing all day long. And the voice you just heard was our very own Santa Claus, the bringer of candy, John Ricciardi, just off the plane. How you doing?
Off the plane. I'm doing good, now that I'm back, finally. And my plane didn't crash, even though I dreamt that it did while I was on the plane.
And now you can go to sleep.
First of all, at night. How much did you sleep?
Yeah.
No, I sleep anywhere. I can sleep on planes. I don't have this affliction that you guys have. Yeah. I slept, like, most of the flight.
But
I had this, like, weird dream where I was, like... Yeah, I've had these kind of dreams before, just never when I was actually on the plane. But, like, I had this, like, weird dream, like the plane was, like, flying over water, and it was, like, really, really close to the water, and it, like, a couple times it's, like, dipping in, and flying through, like, these narrow hallways and stuff. And then a couple times in my dream, I'm like, well, that can never happen in real life, so this must be a dream, so I'm just gonna roll with
it. Okay. Well, you know, we're glad you made it back in one piece. You're the Santa Claus because you brought us all sorts of... candy from America, from the motherland.
That's right.
We got these, like, candy canes filled with Skittles. There's a big basket of Smarties. American Smarties. Hershey's Kisses, Starburst. All things you really can't... You can get Hershey's Kisses here, but you can't get the other stuff here. And we always like when people bring us candy, so bring us candy. Mm. Also with us today is Sarah and Stitch Podzorski, because you were doing some work.
I was.
You were putting in some overtime.
In some real fucking work.
Reinforcing some gender roles.
Because we kind of all pulled together to get Mark some stuff.
Not Mark, John.
Some Christmas presents.
Thank you. Awesome, by the way.
We got you some Amiibo cases, and then
so we don't have to look at it looks like. A war happened and all these amiibos are dead.
Yeah. Because they're lying down on top of each other.
Like, literally, he's like setting boxes on top of his amiibos to show off like other figures.
So you guys got me these like plastic cases and they fit perfectly in my
cabinet.
We measured.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you should see the diagram.
One's ever done something like that.
We appreciate
it. I mean, I was a little tired of looking at them.
They look good now. Now you can look at them all the time.
And then Sarah, little known fact, you're quite the cross stitcher.
Yep.
I had no idea.
I can cross-stitch. Well, the nice thing about cross-stitch is I kind of got into it because, like, retro games are all pixel.
Yeah.
And cross-stitch is very much, like, pixely, too.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, combining, like, video games.
But aren't you the retro hater?
I am, but it makes it really convenient for cross-stitching.
Yeah.
To cross-stitch retro things.
You could do video game stuff, and the patterns are basically already made for you.
But, like, I'm the kind of person where someone's like, get this person a really special present, and I'm like, oh, I gotta make something.
Yeah.
But I'm also the kind of person who, like, waits until the last minute to make the present. Because, like, it's not Christmas if I'm not, like, knitting or cross-stitching on Christmas Day. That's not Christmas to me. So, literally, John's been gone for a week. And
2 weeks.
2 weeks. But I only started the second week.
Yeah.
He's gone. And I started, like, on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can finish this in a day. And I'm, like, working on it. Like, so fucking... It took me 3 days, and John walked in the office, and I literally had just finished this morning, bought a frame during lunch, nice. Like, shoved it in the yeah. frame. I was like, this is going to work.
I'll have tweeted it by the mm-hmm. time this podcast yeah. is out, so you can see, but mm-hmm. it's pretty awesome.
The design is a Famicom cart with mm-hmm. the 8-4 logo in it. It's mm-hmm. pretty cool. Also with us is a
special
Graham.
Guest.
Oh, we're going to go to the special...
I was going to skip Graham, but no, Graham. Okay.
Well, Graham, I mean, this is only exciting to those of us in Shibuya, but Graham, the Taco Loco, the Taco King of Shibuya.
I'm glad that I just get to be, like, the talking point for all food.
Yeah.
You stuff are. Here.
Well, I feel like we've put you in the food. You're the Gurume reporter.
And it's not McDonald's this week.
Not McDonald's.
And there's no McDonald's here, so you can actually talk about it.
That's right. So... For those who don't know, Mexican food, the situation with Mexican food in Japan is pretty dire.
It's dire.
There are places that have really good Mexican food, but they're kind of out of the way. They're in, like, kind of rich people places, or they're just really expensive.
They're few and far between.
Yeah, they're few and far between. And a place just opened up in Shibuya.
The Tex-Mex Factory.
Tex-Mex Factory, yep. Which I think is an American restaurant. Someone Dorito that and let me know. But... The thing is that it's 1,000 yen, $10, 890 mm-hmm. yen if you're going by today's yen rate, and it's all-you-can-eat tacos.
From 11:30 to 3, so if you get in early, you've got a solid, like, 3.5 hours
yeah.
of just tacos.
And you can just load it up with whatever
and
you want.
Oh, it's like free drinks, too.
Free drinks.
Just any, like, Coke, coffee, whatever, free drinks,
so
unlimited.
It's $10 unlimited food.
Yeah. Yes.
They must kick you out after a certain amount of time.
They do not.
Really?
Until
3.
Should, though.
Until 3. Yeah. So, I mean, if you get in there at 2:30, you're only getting, like, 30 minutes, but if you get there at 11:30...
Mm-hmm.
I would love to know the business model behind
See,
that.
See, that's
how
you're wondering.
Yeah, it did feel a little like this restaurant won't be around very long.
Roy was really... Because Roy went there and he had like an epiphany moment.
He was having
He looked
moment.
Like he was going to cry. Yeah. He was like, I'm so happy that I finally have this here. And then all of a sudden he just like snaps and he goes, this isn't going to be around. This isn't going to stay in business.
He was kind of panicking.
He's like, they're giving away tacos.
And on top of that, they have... Like 6 different varieties of Tabasco sauce.
Oh yeah, just at every table.
On the table, which is just like it's mind blowing.
So was it good?
It was fantastic.
Really?
It was okay.
Graham, give us the Graham review.
I'm gonna just say it was good with a capital G.
Yeah,
it was good.
I
can't wait to go there again.
Yeah. Okay.
I've had better tacos in Tokyo, but
yeah.
you can't beat the price and the amount you get.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll try it out.
Well, I mean, also we do our family lunch now
mm-hmm.
every
That's
Wednesday,
right. yeah.
and we found a place that can fit all of us.
Yeah, so now it's either New York pizza or tacos. And finally, our guest for this final episode of the year,
very special guest,
special guest
from all the way across the world,
and his name is Steve Gotcha Man. Lynn?
Yes.
There
hey. It's great to be here. All right. Actually, when you were talking about tacos, I thought you were going to say, hey, there's a Taco Bell over here.
There is a Taco Bell.
Yeah.
It's actually gotten better.
Did you see their cheese? It's shaped like stars. They're not even making...
What?
Yeah, they're not even faking, like, shredded cheese. They're just pressing it into shapes and throwing it on the tacos at this point.
It makes it special.
Yeah.
Because it's a star.
Yeah.
But you're the gotcha man because you... we'll talk about all the stuff you've been doing here in Tokyo. But
yes.
One of the things you were doing here is you found... Is it the world's largest gotcha machine or is it just a large gotcha machine?
I think it's a large gotcha machine and they're not saying world's largest, but it's like... Six feet tall?
6 feet tall, geez.
Yeah, so, and you walk up to it, and it's got, like, giant, you know, eggs inside, and actually, to turn the handle on it, you actually have to win a ticket from one of the other, like, 10 gacha machines that are around it. So it's like Kampu gacha.
Oh,
like
so there's
normal-sized gacha machines
yeah,
to get the tickets?
With stuff in there, and so, like, you know, you might get a little toy, but you're really looking for the ticket, and then they give you a special coin, and then you turn the big knob.
And
so,
then when yeah. when you do the big machine,
yes.
is the egg that comes out also big?
Yeah, the egg is also big, the coin is big, the knob is big, like,
okay.
and even the, like, the warning sticker, like, everything's basically a regular gacha machine, just
fun-sized
up. Yeah, fun size, wow. like human size.
So are the things that come out of the gacha eggs, are they big, are they, like, substantial? Because it seems like it's more like you won a raffle and you get the chance to get something bigger? Or?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different prizes. Actually, the one I saw someone get a giant egg that was full of all kinds of smaller ones.
Really?
So it was probably
oh, wow.
like 20
no,
of them in there.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so it was like, gotcha. Mine was a gift card, and then I also had like soybean candy
what?
Or something like that. It was,
what was your gift card to?
It was to the stores that were
oh,
like,
okay.
right there.
The in Tokyo the Tokyo Station?
Yeah, in the Tokyo Station store. So
that's
yeah,
pretty
it was,
awesome.
It was really
super
cool.
Gotcha.
Yeah, super gotcha. So I think it just showed up yesterday.
Really?
What? Yeah. Was it pretty busy? Did you have to wait a long time?
Well, there was a lot of people like around the machines trying to get the ticket. So when I got one, they like whenever somebody gets one, they ring this bell and everybody like gathers around to watch.
How long did it take you to get the ticket?
How much money?
It cost me probably 1,600 yen.
Oh, not bad then.
Yeah. So, but I'd heard of someone spent like, you know, 5,000 yen. I mean, I think it's like kind of luck of the draw on that stuff.
Yeah. It's like mobile games made physical.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's like, oh, I got the ticket. And like people cursing you.
Yeah. Well, so you've been in Japan for what, 2 weeks now?
Almost three now.
Almost three. Yeah. And you've just like run the gauntlet of things to do.
I've been trying.
Yeah, you've been doing. I've been following your adventures on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, and you've been doing like all the stuff that I would love to do if I actually had free time when I was here. Like the Parappa thing.
The Parappa pop-up shop. That thing is awesome.
Yeah,
you have to go to that.
So why don't we just talk about this? Like, tell us about that. So this is a new thing, right? It only started a couple weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, it started a couple weeks ago. I think it ends in the middle of January, and it's for the birthday, right? For the anniversary.
Right.
And so there's a giant birthday cake in the middle, and Parappa and PJ are up top.
Uh-huh.
And they have, you know, all the games, and there's a Master Onion Dojo that when you play the game, the whole display starts moving as you're getting through. Like, they flip around, and, like, the onions move up and down. And
that's awesome. And it's just you're playing the original that
you're
stage,
playing
basically?
That first stage, right.
Okay.
It's on the PS4.
Oh, okay.
So it's the whatever.
So it's the one that's coming out.
It's the one that's coming out. And I didn't really run into that many, like, lag issues. I think some people would complain about that. But, of course, the entire set is moving around you when you're playing it's a little bit hard to
I bet they probably set up the screen for that thing to have like as little lag as possible, knowing that they want people to have like an optimal, you know, experience whatever.
But. Yeah, and of course there's like tons of merchandise you can buy, and then there's a game where there's a giant inflatable PJ, and you can throw donuts in his mouth. And
they like real donuts?
Yeah, they're like all like plush donuts. But it's actually quite hard, and if you get like five of them in there, then you get a big prize, which is a plush, and then the small prize is just like a tote bag or something.
Nice.
Were they selling the Parappa skull cap or?
They didn't have the beanie, skull. They didn't have the beanie. They had a ton of plushes and folders and pens and like all kinds of other stuff.
I got one of those waiting for me.
Oh, they have t-shirts. Really? Yeah, t-shirts and hoodies.
Oh, nice.
Too. So yeah, I got a Master Onion hoodie.
Where was this?
This is in the Fuji TV like observation sphere.
Odaiba, right?
Oh, so in Odaiba. Okay.
Yeah, in Odaiba. So yeah, you go up like so it's that 25th observation sphere, and whatever was in there, they pulled that out, and then it's all that Parappa pop up.
By the way, just like Japan side note. Well, I'll even preface that with this is the last episode of the year. It's vacation time. Like, we're going to talk about whatever the hell we want. Don't mind us rambling on. But so Odaiba. Odaiba is this place in Japan that I really don't like because it's like on a landfill.
I got interviewed there.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, by a TV?
TV Tatami.
Recently or?
No, when I first got here.
Oh, okay.
That was my first Japanese interview ever.
Like, what do you think of the Gundam?
Right, that's where the giant Gundam is, the giant life-size Gundam, which is amazing.
For it's not definitely much longer, apparently.
I know,
they're moving it.
They are. I think they're moving it or tearing it down or something. But
someone's going to say, "Oh, earthquake destroyed it."
It'd be cool if they just destroyed it with like an enemy.
It needs to be a hero's death for sure. A Viking death.
Odaiba. So I've been seeing recently people who are visiting here from overseas, and then they're like posting about it, and it's like Diver City.
Yeah,
like,
what?
That's what Odaiba means. Like I've never diver. Like dive in the water, diver.
Diver City is the name of the mall the Gundam is in front of.
Right, he's saying that
Odaiba.
Diver City is a pun on Odaiba.
Oh, is it?
Odaiba, yeah.
Odaiba, I don't think is...
So it didn't originally mean diver.
It's just a pun.
But they call it Diver City because of Odaiba.
Yeah.
I see.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'd never put those two together until now, because nobody says that here, but overseas, when people go there, they call it Diver City.
I didn't know.
Diver City, yes.
Anyway, it's great fan service.
I want to check it out.
Yeah, you should definitely.
It looks really cool.
Is it just Parappa, or is my girl Lammy there, too?
There is a bit of Lammy kind of scattered throughout, but not as much as I would want as well.
Mm. Yeah, right?
Yeah, I definitely want more Lammy in there.
That's what I prefer of the two.
Hopefully this thing will come out and do really well, and like maybe they'll consider making another one. I don't know. It's hard because it's one of those things where like even if you decide to do it, it doesn't mean it's going to be good. You have to get the right voice talent. You have to actually have good lyrics, which is really hard.
Well, I mean, Parappa 2 was a thing that happened.
I know. Parappa 2 wasn't terrible. Did you not like it? I mean, it wasn't as good as the first game or Lammy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, I was glad they made it.
Maybe it was too soon.
It was hard. It's like hard to get that music magic that Parappa 1 and like Busta Groove those games, like, for me, were, like, the two big music games on PS1, and, like, they could never recreate that original magic because they just didn't have the music.
Well, that's the thing. I think the big thing about Parappa was it had really good music and it had really funny lyrics. They weren't even always smart. Like, I mean, they were sometimes, like, Japanese English kind of, you know what I mean? But they were still, really cute and, like, made you laugh and they, like, were well-timed. And
I forgot to close the door.
You forgot. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Anyway, I miss Parappa, but I'm glad they're bringing it back. So.
Yeah, and people can leave birthday messages on Post-its on the giant birthday cake, and you can just see all like the love for Parappa on there. So
that's awesome.
There's definitely a lot.
They do have that small like 5-minute cartoon now. I don't know if it's still airing, but it started a few months ago.
Yeah, that looked hideous.
Yeah.
Well, isn't the like voice actor for Parappa like a total like crazy man now? Though no. He's like tweeting all this crazy shit and like So I don't know. They might have did a voice match.
Facebook troll.
That's a shame.
Yeah, so, you also went to the new most northern arcade in Japan. So, a little background on this. There's an episode of Game Center CX where Aidino Kacho goes to the... I think he does the most southern and the most northern arcades in Japan.
Oh, really?
And apparently there's one that's even more north now.
Yeah.
And you went to it.
Well, so yeah, it's not really a full game center. Like, what happened in the show was he went to Okane, which is like the last stop, and there's big signs that say, and then every store and restaurant is like, this is the most north whatever, like the most north toilet and the most north restaurant and whatever. But the game center he found was actually closer to the one stop south.
Okay.
And it's like a full-on game center with UFO catchers and everything. But then... they opened up a movie theater at the last stop at Wakane, and it has 4 arcade games there. There's a Pac-Man Championship Edition, and then there's like one of those card, like two of those like kid card games, and then there's Anpanaman, like kids game.
Oh, that the one that's like
it looks
a booth.
Like a house. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they give you a little card at the end.
Yeah, okay. So I'm familiar. Those are the 4 games in that arcade.
Yeah.
And that game is actually the most north game because I didn't find anything else when I was going through the other shop. So
that's
that's actually the most north because I think the original Hunt was the most northern arcade game.
Did you go out there in the hopes of finding the most northern place, or were you just happened to be there and were like, I'm going to check this out?
I just happened to be there.
Okay.
And then I was because I was going to the most north point in Japan and it's freezing cold. It's, you know, like -6 and then the heat, like, crazy.
Unlike here right now.
Right.
Yeah, unlike here right now. We're in like t-shirts.
It's like LA weather here. Yeah. In Tokyo. It's very weird.
So I was up there and then I was looking some things up and then the Game Center CX episode came up. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
And then I looked for where that Game Center was and then I saw like, but there's games up here. And so like, oh, I think this
did
is
did you tell them they were wrong?
I think it was made like 10 years
write
ago.
Write them a letter and be excuse me, but...
actually, you should revise that episode.
Hey, you know, it's another reason to go back there. But what other game stuff have you been doing since you've come here?
So I've been trying to go to game stores that are way out of the way.
Yes. Good idea.
Yes. I mean, because like, you know, Akihabara and Denden Town are prices are pretty much the same, and that's where all the tourists know, like Super Potato and everything else. So I've been trying to take trains, you know, an hour or two away from cities that are already like 2 hours away.
Right.
And how are you researching? Like, are you just going and you're to random spots and looking around, or are you researching ahead of time? Like, where are the, you know, good hard to find spots to go to?
I'm researching where game stores are, so it's less about like, if there's a cluster of them. I mean, like, obviously, like, Osaka and its sort of neighboring cities and things like that. But I'm just kind of, all right, where do game centers or game stores pop up? Or, like, toy stores?
Yeah.
I know an old toy collector, and so he kind of gave me a couple tips. And then, yeah, just taking out a train, and a lot of these places are... you get off the stop, and he's like, I cannot possibly be in the right place. I'm in a residential area, and I don't know what's happening. And then you kind of walk like 5 blocks, and you turn a corner, and it's like, apartment building, okay, this place sells games. And then,
oh, that's,
you know,
so
like,
cool.
Sushi place. So
did you like hit a lot of book-offs, or were there like more like mom-and-pop sort of places?
A lot of mom-and-pops. I did. Whenever I saw a book-off, I'd go in just to see what was there. But yeah, it was... a lot of it, I mean, we talked about this kind of before the show. I don't really have to buy anything anymore or much. So I'm looking for what are prices like, what is inventory like, and then do they have anything really rare that I've never seen before?
So did you see anything that was kind of surprising? Like, oh, it's only this much here, and it's in the middle of nowhere. And
hardware games, like systems, were crazy. I was finding like full-on GameCube systems for 400 yen.
Whoa.
That's roughly $4.
Yeah, $4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Super Famicom inbox for 3,000 yen.
Oh, man.
Right? So you're just, like, looking around, like, and, you know, tons of games that are under 100 yen for Super Famicom, and PlayStation games, like, I think the lowest-priced PlayStation game I saw was 20 yen. Which is,
was it Mahjong?
No, it was actually like Gran Turismo.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there was a ton of them in that price range, right? But you're just kind of looking through. And, yeah, if I was a loose game collector and I was just starting to, that's where I would I would buy all my
games. And just in case any of our listeners don't know, haven't heard of you, so you are kind of in the scene. You're, like, very well known as one of the, like, the, you know, air quotes, the collectors. You've been collecting for a really long time, as far as I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where, like you said, now you've almost, you don't need anything anymore, right? You've kind of got most of your major goals hit already.
Yeah, yeah. I checked off almost all the big boxes. Yeah, in terms of what I do, actually, Frank Cifaldi and I just started the Video Game History Foundation.
Nice.
Which is a 501c3, like a nonprofit in the U.S., dedicated to games preservation.
So and awesome. So, I love this.
Mm-hmm. We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, so it's gamehistory.org. It's pretty easy. We're just kind of getting started in January is really when we're going to hit the ground running with some of our early projects.
Yeah.
I've said for a long time, my entire collection is going to be donated to different museums and archives and library projects
awesome.
That are around.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, at this point, I'm just trying to find stuff that, you know, either was produced in extremely limited quantities or never released, right? Like I'm looking for a lot of paper and prototypes and things like that. So,
right. You know. And you have tons of that stuff, right? I mean, like, if I ever, like, had a chance to go through, like, your collection or Frank or some of those guys, like, I would probably die because you guys have so much stuff that, like, nobody else. Well, we were talking when we were, so we hung out a couple weeks ago, and I remember you telling me you own an M2 system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is just, like, crazy. Like, it has a console that never came out, the 3DO successor.
Yeah.
But, like, what would you say are, like, your biggest, like, most rare pieces in your collection? Whether you still have them now or had them before, but, like...
Right.
And also tell us how you got it.
Okay. Let's see. The rarest stuff, I mean, the stuff that everyone knows, Stadium Events in the Box and Manual.
Which is the most expensive and rare NES game ever produced.
Right. And then I have Nintendo World Championships Gray and a Gold. So those are kind of the big... I have a complete in-box NES and Super Nintendo collection, TurboGrafx. Vectrex.
Whoa.
Every game.
Inbox.
Yeah.
What?
So, yeah, it gets real bad.
Yeah.
And you're donating all that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all. I mean, there's some stuff that it's like...
I'm just going to start a museum and then you can donate it.
Yeah.
So where do you donate it? Like, what places?
Yeah, so there's a couple different projects. There's a National Video Game Museum in Frisco, Texas. There's a Strong
Texas?
Museum of Play.
Texas,
why? Yeah, Texas gave... They gave them a really good deal. Mm. The Strong Museum of Play is an excellent... organization.
That's where Kevin Gifford donated all of his magazines.
Kevin Gifford, and then they've also got Roberta Williams' King's Quest, her notes when she was
really
making,
wow.
They like tons of crazy stuff like that. Library of Congress and the Smithsonian as well. Computer History Museum, and one of the things we did as starting the nonprofit was building relationships with other organizations.
Yeah.
You know, like Jason Scott and, you know, the Internet Archive. Just making sure that, you know, we don't actually want to own anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you guys are going to start a museum or something. So that's actually not what we're planning. What we want to do is bring things in, get things scanned, you know, tell the story about what it is or use it in research and then make sure it goes to some place that actually really knows how to take care of it.
Properly preserve it.
Exactly.
That's right. Awesome.
Oh my gosh.
You know, not just us.
I want to be you.
Yeah.
I want to steal you, go back to college, and like make you my professor. teach me, sensei. Teach me.
How do you archive stuff? Well, I worked at a video. I mean, when I was a kid, I never got rid of anything.
Yeah.
And so that starts with Atari 2600 and ColecoVision. And then when I was in high school, I worked at a used game store between the NES and Super Nintendo era. So during that time is when I just, you know, everybody's like, how did you get all the boxes? I'm like, well, at that time we would throw away the boxes, so I would keep them. And the manuals. That gave me a huge head start on NES. So, you know, by the time, and then the video game history museum or yeah, video game museum. They keep changing them. So at the first Classic Gaming Expos, I was that weird kid buying all the NES games when everybody was focused on Atari and Television ColecoVision. They're like, oh, that stuff's worthless. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll keep paying $1 for all these games.
Oh, right.
So that's how I got the bulk. And then in terms of the weird stuff that I have that one flyer that the Now You're Knitting with Power, which was like,
what?
it's actually like this knitting like loom device that was designed for the NES.
What?
So there's a flyer for it that says Now You're Knitting with Power.
That's amazing. So was it a game where it would just show you patterns and you would knit it and then?
This was a machine.
It was like a sewing machine.
It
kind of looks like a loom.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably the best way to. But there was a sewing machine attachment for the Game Boy.
The Power Loom.
What the hell? I need these things.
It was a Singer sewing machine that connected to the Game Boy, and the cartridge had the sewing patterns on it. So you pick the pattern,
and then would it sew for you?
And then it would sew. Yeah, you put the fabric.
That's
in.
Insane.
Why don't they make these? I mean, I know I don't make these anymore, right. But now I want one.
But the loom thing, so that never actually came out, right?
No,
that
was they just made like the hardware, but I just have the flyer.
Did that ever come out in Japan, or just because like sometimes like a lot of this, some of the stuff that they showed in the early. So, like, pre-NES, there was the AVS, right?
Which,
and some of that stuff is still on display at the Nintendo store in New York. But, like, when they first designed the Nintendo and showed it at CES, which was, like, E3 back then, they showed it in its older form, which, like, took Famicom-sized cartridges. It was top-down. It was looked a little bit more like a stereo component or whatever.
Yeah, it looked very much like a VCR of that time.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it was good-looking, I think. I mean, I think they made the right choice, I think. But it wasn't a bad-looking machine. But it also had, like, a cassette tape add-on, and it had a keyboard, and it had all these peripherals, some of which did actually exist in Japan.
Right.
But I guess the sewing thing was just the thing that was probably concept only and never actually came
through. Yeah, never actually made it out. And then I think the thing that I'm kind of most excited about is I have a set of Black Box NES games, which are the original releases, Mario Brothers, Balloon Fight, all those others. But all of them have a sticker on the front that says Magnavox versus Nintendo, because they were actual evidence used in the court case when Magnavox and Sanders sued Nintendo for patent infringement.
What?
Oh my God.
So that actually has also the acquisition story is pretty funny.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so what happened was there was one or two of them of those games, like the Black Box games, showed up on eBay and then were sold for something like $10,000.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice it until after the auction had ended. I'm like, what is that sticker? And so we're looking, and I'm like, oh my God, these were used. And so I started doing research, and I found out that the rest of the games were going to be sold in an auction in Paris.
Why Paris?
Because that's where the collector was who owned them.
Ah,
and so he had this huge lot, and it was an actual auction house. So this isn't like eBay or anything. Mm-hmm. So it was an auctioneer. And so I had to be a phone bidder.
Whoa.
And so I was
how
the
many did they have?
Yeah.
Well, so they had it was everything that wasn't sold in that initial lot. So it was the rest of them. I think I have total 12, right? And I was the guy on the phone. And so I can hear like the auction and the person's translating for me because it's all in French.
Oh my god.
And I basically said like, I don't care how much it goes for.
Yeah.
Right? I will and like at one point I just said like I think it was like 2,000 euro or something. Whatever. I just said, and I could hear the audience kind of groan.
Yeah.
Right? They're like, oh, it's that good. Like, what's this guy doing? And then I won a couple lots because he kept saying my bidder number.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the weirdest thing. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm on the telephone to France.
And you're just like, get them for us. Just win it.
We deserve them for
that.
That's
like, amazing. As soon as we got those, there was like a lot of paperwork in there as well. Like one of the things what they actually kind of threw in as a bonus was it's handwritten testimony from Ralph Baer on where Nintendo is violating the patent. So it's like his handwritten notes. He's saying like, you know, here's, they're using this because they gave him an NES.
The father.
To like dissect, basically. Mm. And so, yeah.
That is so cool.
That's crazy.
And they all, they're full, like complete, like box and manual and cart and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and so it was stuff that I think the Magnavox lore is just bought at a store.
Wow.
Because some of them still have, to use in the trial, right? So, but the fact that they all have that thing on them.
I'm surprised they, bought them from a store, put a sticker on them, and then somehow they were just, like, released back out to be sold.
Yeah, so how did that happen?
Yeah, so,
illegal.
Yeah. My understanding, so it was used in the trial. So, once the trial is over, the whatever they used as evidence actually goes back. We're not like criminal cases. Mm-hmm. Right? This is a civil suit. So that stuff goes back to whatever organization provided them, right? And they're probably just like, oh, well, we don't need these anymore.
We just bought them in a store.
So yeah, we just bought them in the store. And so
they sell them at Fungoland or something.
Yeah, well, so in this case, it went to an associate of Ralph Baer. And then he was the one who actually ended up selling them as part of this lot. So, yeah, that's the thing when I pull that out. I'm like, this is... why do I own this? I had some of that CD-ROM documentation. I've got Howard Phillips' original script for when he was demoing Rob at FAO Schwartz.
Whoa.
With like handwritten notes like, don't do this. So Howard Phillips did. I got some of it from him. The game master. And yeah, he was like, yeah, you know, it was just one of those things. He kept it, mm-hmm. and then he's like, I don't need to have this stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
Yeah, we want to have it go to people who
And I've heard lots of stories of people like you who, like, you know, once word gets out that you're a collector and, like, you are after these things, stuff will just fall on your lap. Because people are like, well, I know this guy will appreciate it more than me, and I have something sort of valuable. I'm just going to give it to him, you know? Like, I know
Do you feel that way?
That actually does happen. It happens a lot. In fact, when we made kind of a soft announcement on Retronauts, talking about the foundation, and then I think it was at Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Mm-hmm. I can't say what it is yet because we haven't. He didn't want us to say what it is, but he came up and says, "Yeah, I have this prototype here, and it's a game that you will know, but was never released."
Please be Bioforce.
Well, Bioforce Save's already out.
Oh,
but yeah. That actually Frank found that one. And then Chris Kohler found the U.S. version.
Can you say what system it's for or anything?
It's for Mega Drive.
Huh.
So,
interesting. So when will
Is it a fighting game?
I'm not going to say.
Don't push it.
Don't push it. Okay. I'll tell you after the show. But anyway.
When will you actually say what it is?
So we will, probably in January around this announcement. I think what we need to do is make sure... We're trying to verify authenticity and all that. This is part of the job of the foundation is really provenance. Mm-hmm. It's figuring out, like, okay, where did this come from? What story is this thing real? Or did somebody ROM hack this or something like that? And then once we have that, then we can attach that to whatever artifact it is and then get that to other people. So, I mean, and then there's stuff like the M2. There's the Pokemon World Championship systems, which there's only 3 variations of.
How are they different?
So they're custom colorware did them for Nintendo, and they were given out to the Pokemon World Champion, the card and the video game champions in 2008, 2009, and 2010. So 2000, and they're each like themed to the city. So when it was in Hawaii, like Pikachu is like in LA.
Of course.
And then San Diego, she's on a surfboard.
Yeah.
And then the 08 is like this bright orange with Pokemon World Championship on them. So each of the, there's 116 each of those, and so I've got all 3 of those.
Nice.
Wow.
So,
and you just find somebody who got one who's willing to part with it, basically.
Yeah. What happened was I found out that it was given out in 2008, and then I basically started contacting the winners and said, like, hey, you know, do you want to sell that system? So what I found out was some people were trading them for like rare cards and stuff at the show.
Oh, wow.
And so
what
there
a
was,
mistake.
Yeah, yeah seriously, yeah, guys, yeah. Come on.
So there was a lot of that going on, so I was able to snag those. And then in 2011, I was like, okay, it's going to be like the 3DS, and I got to find it. And then they never made one. It's like, what are you guys doing? I cut that off. But yeah, prototypes and everything else, a lot of stuff that we've dumped. I think this year we released a Chips Challenge on NES, which wasn't out before.
That was a Lynx game, right?
It was, a Lynx game, and on Windows as well. There was an unreleased Nintendo version that we found, and it has a NES exclusive level. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, but no sound. That's not the problem.
They didn't get that far.
Yeah, they didn't get that far. And then, you know, a bunch of other stuff. So.
Right. Oh, man, that's super cool. Yeah, all this stuff sounds amazing. And so when you guys start this, you know, foundation in earnest, like, are you going to be providing a lot of this information for the public? Or, like for example, you're talking about scanning all these things and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, will regular people be able to see those? Or?
Yeah, that's the whole point. Okay. Right. And, in fact, that's kind of the... one of the things that's really a big point for us is making sure all the information is accessible to everyone. You know, we see a lot of prototype like hoarders where they're saying, you know, I won't release it, or I want to sell a repo card. And I understand people need to make their investment back in many cases. Like prototype, undumped prototypes aren't cheap.
Right.
And I've said, like, there's a couple I'll spend, you know, between $2,000 and $3,000 for, and then I'll dump it, and then it immediately becomes worth $500. So you kind of lose that money right away. So I understand people need to recoup, or, you know, some people just like having that feeling of knowing that they have something that other people can't have.
Right.
Yeah, and so we're totally against that. For us, it's scan and distribute, tell the story, and there's more work than, you know, we can handle, so we'll just try to do our best.
Will you guys do stuff like I don't even know if this is like ethical or not. I'm just honestly curious. Like, if would you guys do like, hey, like this thing is out there, but the guy wants X money, you know, let's crowdfund it or something to be able to buy it? Or
we can. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it past it. At this point, if it's for sale, in most cases, I will try to buy it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some, you know, for instance, the Socks the Cat. Like, I made that guy a couple offers, and he turned me down a bunch of times. The Super Nintendo PlayStation, I made offers on that, and was...
That was the Holy Grail. Like, I mean, it still kind of is the Holy Grail, but I feel like it's like holiness has been cheapened somewhat by the fact
that,
like,
it's out a lot.
Yeah, they kind of pour it out a little bit and take it all the shows and everything.
You know, that's the thing, though.
It's getting dirty.
For them, I mean, it's a really cool artifact, and I'm glad that other people are able to see it.
Totally.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And to touch it. And that's the scary thing.
To
right?
touch
they're,
it?
Yeah, they're letting people play
it.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube channel where a guy had it and he was fixing it. Like,
Like, Ben's not some random guy off the street.
Sure.
Like, he's
in good
sort of working, so that's impressive.
Yeah, definitely. So, but yeah, you know, that I made offers on that. But I'm glad it's, you know, people are able to see it, and Ben got his hands on it. They scanned everything.
The real grail is a disc game made for that system.
Right. Secret, like a prototype of Secret of Mana, or like Seventh Guest was definitely in development for that, because I had friends working on it. I remember them telling us about it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's
so
a lot
cool.
of stuff. I mean, you know, we know that the game exists somewhere, or rather it did exist at some point,
right?
It still exists. Like, it's hard to say. Like, you know, in fact, one of the other things we're trying to do is oral histories, because almost everyone who was involved in the industry from the very beginning is still with us, you know, aside from folks like Ralph Baer. And one thing we've I mean, everybody's getting older, they start forgetting things.
Totally.
Right? So all the documentation, all the research we do allows us to help bookend things for them. So if we want to know about a game that was not released, we can say, like, well, you just finished this game. You were probably working on the game with this person in this building. And then the game after that was this, right?
So you sort of sprinkle some of the seeds on so they, like, kind of can remember where they were at
exactly,
that time.
Right. And so you're really, like, kind of setting the table. And then that happens a lot, where they're like, oh, right, okay, now I remember that. And it was called this, and here's how far we got into it. And then, of course, the next question is, does it exist still? And they're like, I don't know.
Right.
You know, we were all super high or something. And just kind of, like, fell
into
the
wayside. They didn't really take good care of the stuff that they didn't release. So.
No. There's a really sad story. There was a, and I'm not going to say who it is, but there's an early guy at a publisher in the Atari 2600 days.
Yeah.
He was going through a divorce, and, he had moved out, and his wife held a garage sale and basically sold boxes and boxes of, you know, EEPROMs, prototypes, everything else to whoever walked through the door. And so, and we know, you know, all that stuff's gone. Like, don't know where it went.
It's like Mark. It's like,
I know Mark has his heart.
I think I've told our story
on the EGM story on this podcast before, but like, we had, when we moved offices from Sendai to Ziff, literally an entire walk-in closet, like a big walk-in closet, full of EEPROMs and old, you know, sample cartridges and everything, was put in a dumpster and just trashed.
Yep.
It was like, you know, when they blew up the planet in Star Wars, like all this, like, great stuff died at once. It was a horrible thing. And even some of the stuff that we kept, like, I cherry picked a few things here and there, and I even gave some of it to Mark. So now it's gone because he lost his thing. But, like, you know, we had some stuff in there that never came to be. Like, I think I've mentioned this too, but I had, like, Illusion of Gaia, when it was called Soul Blazer 2, right. And like before Nintendo retranslated it and everything, like in English, working on a Super Nintendo. I've never seen that. Is that out there somewhere?
I'm not sure, actually. I should look. Like, you know, Jason Scott has said this at the Internet Archive. It's steal from work, right? A lot of stuff has been preserved because someone took something home.
Sure, yeah.
And then, was it the code for Day of the Tentacle was like that? They weren't able to restore because, you know, just he had happened to take a computer home.
Right, and that's how they were able to remaster it, right?
Yeah, exactly, because they had the source code on that computer they took from the office. And so, you know, we're seeing a lot of that, you know, here in Japan, we hear stories of a lot of contractors. It's like, oh, we have to send this back. It's like, you worked on that 30 years ago. Like,
I still have a few like random ROMs and stuff that are just like, yeah, please return to whoever. And they didn't care at the time. Yeah. It wasn't like there was anything malicious or whatever.
Oh, but the people I talk to here are like, of course we need to send it back. Like, yeah. Oh, and slapping your forehead.
Like, I still have the E3 like Symphony of the Night where you can play like the English game with Japanese voices, or like I have I have a beta of Knights. I have a beta of Resident Evil for Saturn. I have all this stuff that was just like, because they honestly, when you're working in the media, they didn't really expect you to send it back. It was just like, don't distribute or whatever.
Right,
of course we didn't. So, oh man, but yeah, like that. Thinking back to that dumpster at EGM though, like if it was today, and I knew, like I would have rented an apartment to get to put that away,
right?
Because that was like a down payment on my future. If I would have, like, I can't believe we let all that shit go to waste.
Yeah, you hear that? I mean, heard that multiple times. Fortunately, so you know, for certain publications, like, we've had people that were there, you know, when GamePro shut down and in San Francisco, and a couple whenever. So what you look for actually is companies that never moved offices,
right?
Because they still have things in a closet. And like I said, when, you know, Capcom Hudson, you know, that whole thing went down in the Bay Area, there was a report like they're starting to throw things away, and so people are just like making a beeline down there to dig through dumpsters. And you know, I have I found a bunch of Atari prototypes because when they shut down Sunnyvale, I knew one of the guys who was helping to kind of clear out the warehouse afterwards. Yeah. They opened up a closet and there's two boxes in there that say Atari games. Call me up, 'cause this is one of those like, oh, Steve collects games.
Right,
and they're like, oh yeah, Steve would want this, and so he hands me these boxes. And it's basically the game. Whenever someone would license an Atari property, they would make the game and then send a copy to the licensing department at Atari.
Right.
So this was just like two huge boxes of sealed games that were all licensed Atari things or like early prototypes. And so that was, and it was like source code disks and everything in there. And they just gave it to me. So. Yeah,
that's amazing. I bet Game Informer's probably got an amazing staff.
Right?
Yeah,
those guys have been going.
Yeah,
forever.
We are definitely going to take a trip up to Minnesota. Probably not in the winter.
Yeah, probably not now.
Right now. Although I was, you know, just in Wakane and Sapporo, so there's some pretty heavy snow up there. But yeah, we're gonna visit them for sure. And then there's a couple other folks that we know. They're like,
because for those that don't know, Game Informer used to own Funkoland, which was a used game thing.
Yeah.
Plus,
they've been
in business since the NES era, and they I think they didn't move, or if they did,
they
everything moved with them. Yeah, so they just have this huge legendary like closet everything.
I wanna go
come out to Minnesota.
Yeah, come to Minnesota.
Yeah.
Well, that probably
well that's
happen.
Cool. I hope I can do something with my stuff someday. I always joke I'm a gatherer, not a collector, because I'm not doing it for the sake of collecting, but I do just happen to have a lot of stuff, and a lot of it is pretty valuable, and like don't think I would ever want to sell it, but I feel like if it was for a good cause or something, maybe I would do something like this. So.
Yeah, I mean, like my personal sort of collection, I don't really buy much anymore. And a lot of it's like, yeah, I'll keep some games around just because I like having certain games like as sort of displays. But I don't need to own everything anymore. In fact, I don't need to own anything anymore. so it can all go.
That's that weird thing that comes with age. You're like,
it's very anticlimactic for completing some of these collections. You sort of slide it in. It's the last game you're looking for, and you're like, all right,
now what?
Now what? I guess I need to look for unreleased games now.
I better take them all out and dust them off.
Yeah, it's like I have to look for the version that has like fewer screws on the back or something.
Right.
And it gets into this real dark hole.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's really awesome.
So
I can't wait to see.
The moral of the story is don't throw anything away ever and steal from work.
Steal from work.
Right.
And then
don't throw anything away.
If you're going to get rid of something, send it to us.
Yeah, well, if you're going to get rid of anything or you have something that, you know, it's like, hey, my dad worked for whatever, or, you know, mom.
My dad worked for Nintendo.
My dad or mom worked for Nintendo, like whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, get in touch with us. Like, if anything, I think what we can do is we can help assess what it is. Right. You know, it's like, hey, is this significant? Is it not? You know, here's probably what it's worth. I mean, you know, for us, that can be that can probably not help us in some cases, but you know, we also want to be an organization that's seen as sort of honorable and authoritative on that. It's like, okay, when someone says like, yes, this is probably worth this much money. And when that person handed us that prototype, we're like, you do realize how much this is worth, right? Just to make sure.
You
know, we don't want to be like the guys who just stole something and ran off and like, you know, like a thief in the night. So
So if anyone listening has anything like that, definitely we'll put the, like we said, we'll put the link in the show notes.
Get in touch with these
guys. You guys should do like 3D scans of stuff where like, I want to be able to like turn the box around, you know what I mean? Like look at the front and the back and the sides or whatever. I don't know if that's possible.
Well, so we're scanning, we scan them flat, which allows us to map it onto a box shape.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. But we can do all that.
Nice.
And then Frank is becoming a Photoshop master. So he's
doing color correction. Color correction.
Right.
Stuff.
It's like, here's the DuckTales poster before and after.
Oh, that's awesome.
The best reproduction of the DuckTales poster ever.
Can we see any of that on the website or?
So the website right now is just a placeholder.
Okay.
And we're going to be, you know, we also don't want to have this humongous hosting bill. So that's, you know, talking to folks like, you know, Internet Archive and other places.
Okay.
Where they, you know, are getting machines, for instance, to Evan Amos, so he can take those awesome product shots. The photo, whenever you see a game system photo
on Wikipedia,
on Wikipedia, it's Evan's, right?
I supported his Kickstarter, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and so we try to get stuff to him so he can shoot it.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, go check that out. And wow, that was a long segment.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, don't be sorry. No, I love it.
That's amazing.
We love that stuff.
I don't care about the news. Yeah, I can talk about it more.
We did also play some games.
All right.
A couple of games.
Some game.
There's one game in particular. I guess it would be Steve, John, and me who have been playing it mostly. Super Mario Run.
Yes.
I tried it.
We tried it.
We went to the Apple Store.
We went to the Apple Store and played it.
Before it came out.
I was a little bit lukewarm on it because there was some, whenever like your, I don't know why, but like if something happens with your phone, like you get a notification or something like that, the input doesn't register correctly.
Mm. I'm not having that problem.
We had that problem in the store, but when I got the real game, it wasn't really an issue.
Oh, okay.
But personally, I'm enjoying it a lot more than I was expecting to.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because, like...
Did you buy it?
I did. Okay. And...
You paid $10.
I paid the $10.
$10. 1,200 yen in Japan.
1,200 yen.
About 10 bucks.
Yeah. I bought it on the American store, so I bought it for 10. Like, I think if you go through it and play it just as a runner and you complete each stage, like, okay, I just beat the stage, go on to the next one, and not doing the coin challenges, then you're not going to have much fun. It's not a very entertaining game. But the coin challenges make it fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything that's it's. I've seen a few people talk about how, oh yeah, I finished it in a few hours and I'm done. And like, what they mean by finish it is they played through every stage, and it's like, that's basically getting to the starting line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's not finishing the game. That's like opening the game so you can actually start playing it for real.
You can't play it like a Mario console game.
No. And that's where it shows its depth, because like when I first played it, the first day, the first couple hours, I was like, you know, it's all right. It's not anything special. Like, I've played deeper, better games on phone before.
Mm.
But then, like, you know, the further you get and the more you play and the more stuff unlocks, like the Toad Rally stuff and the and getting all the coins and everything, like, it turns into a pretty deep game and has really good level design.
Yeah.
Plus there's other playable characters. Like, I play almost always as Toad because Toad's more my speed. Toad's faster, and like the pace is a little more hectic, but it's more like, like, I feel with Mario is a little too leisurely sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Toad's nice and fast. Princess is terrible because she's all floaty and slow. Sorry.
I haven't gotten any of the extra characters. How do you get the extra characters?
Toad, you just got to link your My Nintendo.
Well, yeah, I got Toad, but what about the
I don't even know how I got the Luigi princess, but I got princesses. I don't have Luigi or Yoshi yet. But,
Luigi,
I think it's
like
winning
Dumpire?
Probably. The tour challenge.
Oh, okay.
Or the whatever.
The Toad Rally?
Toad Rally.
Yeah. Now, Toad Rally is my favorite part. Toad Rally is really fun because, like, you basically play you get five opponents to choose from, and then you play one of them, and you are basically playing against that player's ghost to run through the stage and get as many coins as possible. You want to get more coins and do more cool stuff to get Toads to, like, cheer for you, and, like, the audience of Toads that you build up gets added to your score at the end. So, like, you might be down by, like, five coins at the end, but if you had more Toads cheering for you, you might come out on top.
You have fans.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's Knights. It's Knights. It's exactly like Knights. You're going through a stage, collecting orbs, doing tricks to get more points, and the angels cheer for you. It's Knights.
But Knights is a single player.
And it's a loop.
It is a loop. It does loop, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like I'm having fun with it. They just added the friendly challenges.
Yeah,
yesterday.
I haven't done that.
It's like the time that like, you can only do it once a day.
Yeah, there's like you get like three, and then you can only challenge one person once per day. And so yesterday it comes out, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna. Haruki's only friend on Mario Run is me.
Well, that's so sad.
Well,
didn't need to tell us that.
I don't want
you
him
didn't
to have.
To tell us.
He's a 5-year-old. I don't want him like
to have friends.
Fraternizing with old men. So I was like, well, it's Haruki. I'm just gonna win. This is gonna be easy. And so I challenged him, and he beat me by 100 coins.
Wow.
250 to 350. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Shame.
Yeah. Like, shame. Ring the bell. Shame.
He has unlimited time to play.
He does. Yeah. But I mean, it's Mario. I fucking grew up with Mario. I should have the edge.
Yeah, but he is like the mobile. He grew up in the mobile advantage land like touchscreens. And you didn't.
The
running into enemy thing, I cannot get over. I realize that actually.
You instinctively want to stop them.
I stomp it all the time.
It bothered me that you can't stomp on them. Like, you have to just jump over them.
Right, and I think
you can stomp on them, but it just
like,
requires
time
crazy
really
time.
Well.
Right.
Yeah.
What I only just figured out.
Of that, yeah. Right?
What I've only just figured out today, and I'm not even sure if this is correct all the time, but what I found is jumping off of them, like let him get on top of them and then jump when you're over them, and then that will also squash them, and like that's like a better way to kill enemies than the normal way. But I know exactly what you mean, because constantly making bad jumps because like I instinctively want to stomp them the way you normally would in Mario
games.
Well, in Toad Rally, you want to crush them because you get coins, and the more you kill them, they level up, the enemies level up, and then you get more coins per enemy.
But I definitely know, I mean, when I was even playing just to get through the levels in the first try, I was deliberately jumping over enemies that would put me in a position where I would miss the next jump.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, right, I can just run into him.
Yeah. They designed it so you run into them, and then the jumps, you can make the jumps that way.
Yeah.
But it's weird because you kind of have to completely unlearn Mario to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
And I wasn't expecting to have to do that, but I think it's a cool way to have Mario on a phone that doesn't sacrifice, like it doesn't make it frustrating, because I think if that wasn't in it probably wouldn't be as good.
No, yeah, again, that's the meat of it, and collecting the coins, like I got all the pink coins already, and then I started working on the purple ones, and they're a lot harder, and like it's getting to the point where I'm like, I don't know if I really want to be bothered with this anymore, but it's like not because it was designed bad or anything, it's just because it's actually challenging enough that like
it's really hard.
I don't think I want to spend all that time on it, but like they're really, really well designed. Like the levels are you can tell that, like, I'm not saying like Nintendo's the only one who can do this, but I mean you can definitely tell there were like super experienced game designers at work in those levels. They're not just like somebody threw some shit together or whatever, you know.
Yeah
And each one, I mean, they're sort of, there's maybe a couple like weaker levels, but you know, there's a lot of variety. There's a lot of different things, you know, like getting the keys and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, this is really cool.
I'm liking it so far, and I'm playing it a lot. Haruki's like, I mean, he's what, like over 1,000 toads in his kingdom right now?
Oh yeah, I only got like 250
or
something.
Ridiculous.
I don't have a lot.
The kid is neat. He needs.
Yeah, and people are complaining about the price and everything. People are complaining about the price, analysts are complaining about the price, and the shareholders are upset, and the stock went down, and it's like, hey, did nobody pay attention for the last 2 months when they said it was going to be exactly this? It's going to be a free-to-start, you know, full price once-ever thing.
Right.
Like, everybody knew this was coming, and then yet everyone's acting like, oh, what did they do to us? It's like, no, this was the plan all along.
Well, remember Pokemon Go, everyone was like, oh, Nintendo's gonna make all this money, but actually,
yeah,
they're dumb.
I mean, I do think it's, like, we've said this on the podcast before, I definitely think they're experimenting with different ways to charge for stuff, and that was the experiment for this one. I don't think the next game is gonna be the same. I'm sure something will be like a traditional Japanese like gacha mechanic or whatever, you know. They'll try everything, and then they'll figure out what makes the most sense, and that's fine.
Did you guys get the survey?
There was an email survey
about Mario Run.
I haven't filled it out, but
I haven't filled it out yet either. Yeah,
what kind of stuff do they ask?
I just saw the email.
I was like, I don't want to do that.
Right. I see.
So are they ever going to release it on Android?
They
said it's coming to Android, but I think it's just, you know, Apple's got probably tons of money in the marketing, right?
Yeah.
And then also
they've been hyping
sense
it for months now.
Well, you could pre-order it.
Yeah.
That's the first time that ever happened,
what?
Right? Well, they're like, get an email notification.
I never got a notification.
Yeah, it came late. It came like
mine. Yeah, came a couple hours. I was here in Japan. So
mine came like 8 hours after I had already bought the game and played through it.
Good job, Apple.
But you know, the other thing about doing it on Apple first, I think, is that Nintendo very much is into closed systems and like guaranteeing a certain kind of game experience. So their vision sort of lines up with Apple's to some degree.
Yeah.
I think. So
I could see that
sense.
Level of quality.
Yeah.
So what else we got? We got Graham. You finished The Last Guardian. No spoilers. But yeah. What did you think?
It's not just me, right?
I mean, no, I finished it.
Yeah,
as well.
Steve, you also finished it. What did you guys think?
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
incredible game. It's really tough to discuss it without actually going into any kind of
detail.
But
I kind of disagree.
Really?
Nice.
I thought it was really frustrating. Like, I played through The Witness, and there were some puzzles where I just kind of set down the controller. I'm like, I'm going to come back to this later. Mm. There were times in The Last Guardian when I actually thought, I don't want to keep playing this game.
Yikes.
Like, the camera was my biggest enemy in many cases. But then, like, Trico every once in a while just deciding. And people said, oh, if you don't have pets. Like, I've had pets. I mean, cats and dogs. Right? And I get it. I'd trying to get Trico to do something, and it would go in the opposite direction, or poop, or do something weird.
You got a trophy for that.
I did get the trophy, yeah. I did get the call of, and you can pick up the poop, you can walk around with it. I don't know why. The end kind of, I'm not going to say what it is, but the end sort of redeemed the overall experience to where I said, there were, and like Trico's design, some of the world design is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's really incredible. But like, there was just so many points of frustration for me that I just can't sort of fully recommend it.
Like, I wonder how much of that is actually like chance, just like the AI deciding or not deciding to do something. Because I had exactly one problem throughout my entire time through the game, and it was actually a bug. Like, I just had to restart from the latest checkpoint, and that immediately fixed it. And there are a lot of times, like, it's really interesting because Trico gets smarter the further you go in. So there were a lot of times where I'd be figuring out a puzzle and then Trico would figure it out first.
Oh, because Trico starts like looking in
a
direction.
He starts like looking at things.
Oh, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And then like I'm still just like standing around like wondering what to do, and Trico just like jumps somewhere and I'm like, yo, bro.
Yeah, well,
I think that's
over
the
there.
Game trying to help you out.
Yeah.
Like,
and like I thought that was really great, but there was never any time where I just like had no idea.
Yeah. Well, the narrator comes off. If you don't know what to do long enough, the narrator sort of gives you the sense like, hey, dumbass, like look over here.
I only found this out afterwards, but you can just like hit the R3 or L3 button. And the boy sits down and he meditates, and it just tells you.
Oh, gee,
are you serious?
What? I didn't know that at all. That could have really helped me during one of the.
I'm going to do that when I get home.
Yeah, but also, I mean, like, how you command him, because, like, eventually it gets to a point where you can start issuing commands.
Yeah, pointing
fashion.
And stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, like, because you have.
Adorable, by the way.
Yeah,
the animations of the little boy jumping and pointing and running.
Yeah, well, there's,
in
like,
place.
All the videos, right? Like, it was running in place.
Basically, one of the buttons in the game is just, like, a Trico button. You hit R1, just like the Trico button.
Yeah.
And then eventually you can hit R1 in combination with other buttons.
Yeah.
Issue specific commands.
Right.
And those have always worked extremely well for me. Like if you do R1 and the jump button.
Right. You have to kind of be in his line of sight. You have to have his attention.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or be on top of him.
There was a couple puzzles where I knew exactly what needed to happen. He just wouldn't do it.
Oh.
And then
they need to make it so you can have like snacks that you can just like throw at the
barrels, right?
But sometimes you're out of barrels. It's like I just need like Scooby snacks or whatever.
Like an annoying pet owner button where you just snap at him.
Right. Yeah. You got like a shock collar or something. But no, there's a. The other thing I had problems with was the camera, because especially there's some cases where you're the boy and it's a jumping puzzle.
Yeah.
And
the camera's pretty bad.
Like a chain or something, and he just like leaps to his death.
Man, I hate jumping.
It can be confusing because you have to like hold the opposite direction when you want to jump off of a chain on your platform, but you're not sure what direction the camera thinks you're facing.
Right.
So you're trying to hit it with your analog stick, but the boy won't actually start lunging.
Yeah. He'll start looking in the wrong direction, and so there was. One puzzle in particular, I kept leaping to my death, like right near the end.
In like the same spot.
Yeah, in the same spot. It's like, and then it was kind of like Super Meat Boy, where you keep dying way deep, and then you keep playing, and then you start dying early again.
Oh, because you get frustrated.
You get frustrated, like, okay. You
know, I remember that.
Yeah, that was what I need to stop. But yeah, so, I mean, like I said, I tell people there's some really interesting things and great things that the game does, but, I mean, did you like Ico? Did you like Shadow of Colossus?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely for those people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
it's
if you played Ico and, like, this isn't for me, don't bother.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Last Guardian if you didn't like Ico.
Nothing's going to change because they are very much like three games. They're like three chapters almost of a game if you wanted to. You know, like, it's almost like the same game, just different, you know.
Not touching on it too heavily, but I was surprised at how much narrative there was. Like, after playing Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, like, this game has cutscenes.
Yeah.
Like, things, it's like you just sit and you watch, which was bizarre for me, and there was, like, a lot of it.
Ico 1 had some of that if you played. Did you play Ico 1 in English or Japanese?
I played in English.
Okay, because if you play it in, did you play the Japanese version later? Because, like...
No, I never did.
If you play it a second time through, you get all the story.
What?
In Ico. The U.S. version didn't have that.
We're learning all kinds of things.
Yeah, the U.S. version, Ico came out, like, 4 months early in the U.S., and this literally wasn't in the game yet, but, like, in the Japanese one, if you beat it, the second time you play through, all the things the Queen says are subtitled. So you actually get story. Yeah.
Oh.
But I mean, yeah, they that said, even with Trico, though, like, there is story, but it's still, they still leave some of it to your imagination, and they leave a lot of it to, like, a lot of it to interpretation. Like,
you
know what happened, but you don't necessarily know why, or, like, the forces behind it or whatever. So they do that really special thing of, like, letting you kind of create the story in your head to some degree. You know what I mean?
It was also very, like, back heavy. Like, I think that's what surprised me, because it's not like you have, like, regular cutscenes throughout the game. It's just, like, you get towards the end, it's like...
Oh, you mean, like, near the end a lot. I see. Well, I haven't gotten that far yet.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's what I was telling a couple people who said, like, should I keep playing this, and ask where they were? Said, like, oh, yeah, you should at least... I mean, it'll...
Like, if you've made it that
if
far.
If you've made it that far, you should keep going. Like, I tell most people, like, because the end really, especially with the cutscenes and everything else, it
I'm gonna try and finish
sort
it
of make
weekend.
The experience... It radically improved the experience for me, even though I didn't like it.
And imagine for me, like, I didn't have many problems with it. So you get to the end, and you're like, bam, this is incredible.
Yeah. Well, you guys sound like a perfect case study, because, like, everybody has been based... I mean, I feel like opinions have been divided, basically, between
Trico.
Graham and Steve, like, opinions on this.
Does Trico agree with you or not?
Yeah. Trico is agreeing with you, that's great. Yeah. You know, for me, it was like, what's happening here? This is totally broken.
Mm-hmm. Well, they released a patch... today. I don't know what's in it. Nobody knows what's in it, because the patch notes were like,
we fixed some stuff.
So we'll see if some of these grievances have been rectified. Or
one thing I recommend too is look up Gen Design's Twitter, the developers of the game. They've been tweeting stuff for like over a couple weeks now, of like in English and Japanese, of just like, did you know this Trico can do this? And did you know this? And they've been revealing a lot of stuff that most people, a lot of people wouldn't find during normal playthroughs.
Right.
Like interesting play mechanics or like hidden secrets or
there's
just
a lot
stuff
there.
You could do.
I didn't know the pooping thing was happening until like I someone told me like, oh, that's an achievement. It's a trophy.
I hadn't even heard that he could do that. So.
Yeah.
That just happened. Like he wasn't actually on camera for me.
So you can't be looking at him. It's kind of like the dog, right?
It's a dog or a cat.
Yeah, don't look at
your
pet.
Go away and don't look at him.
But like after a big tense scene, like I just look away from Trico. Pops up.
Is there like a big noise in the background? Like,
I didn't notice anything.
That's amazing.
And then I opened up my trophy, saw what I got.
Yeah.
Like, wait, there you go.
And I'm just like staring at a wall. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, all right. Well, it sounds like opinions are divided. I'm still playing it.
I'll definitely finish it over the break.
Break, I intend to finish it. So we'll probably have more of that on our back-to-school episode after the new year. And let's see, what else? Anybody been playing? I played, this is a little bit of interest to you, John. So Dragon Quest Monster Battle Scanner.
Oh, yeah. Is that an arcade game?
Yeah, it's like a kiddie arcade game. You know, they have arcade games here that are sized for children. McDonald's, tying it back, Graham, McDonald's, their Happy Meal toys for right now are McDonald's branded cards for that game. And they're these really large, I mean, not even like baseball card. I wouldn't, you know... There are some that are like credit card size.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are some that are like two credit cards, and then there's
like
one that's,
card size. Or
yeah, there's one that's like long, like I don't know, like a giant receipt or something.
Weird. Okay.
You get them from your Happy Meals, and then you can use them in the game. And basically, how it works is there's this dragon wand. Sword spike thing that will scan QR codes, and then basically the monsters that are in your cars will appear in game.
Okay.
And you go through a quest, which is just a series of boss fights. It's almost kind of like what you would see in a mobile game, just in a more like flashy sort of way. And then at the end of the quest, there's like a gacha mechanic where it'll show you like 8 or 9 monsters of various rarities that you can get cards for. And you can get any of them or all of them if you pay money. So you put in 100 yen to play, but at the end it's like, okay, well you can still get any of these, like, not like these normal guys or like the rare guy or the super rare guy. But
how much are they?
The regular guys are just another 100 yen, but the super rare another 200 yen.
Okay.
And of course the kids are going to want the super rare ones.
Right.
And, I just thought it was funny because the whole mobile gacha mechanic, this like insidious mechanic that has ruined large portions of Japanese gaming industry,
like now seeped, spreading to children.
It's seeped into these arcade machines where it's like even
and
more.
And the arcade machines are amazing.
They're incredible. They're like these giant vertical
Don't
screens.
Don't even get me started on Puri Para.
Dude, Puri Para. So, yeah, like Puri Para is this, it's like an idol-based card game. Sarah's watching the anime right now.
It's great.
And the graphics for it are amazing.
That's from the Style Savvy people, right?
Yeah, it is from the Style Savvy.
Someone's
got to
hook me up with that game.
But it's crazy because the graphics are insane. Mm-hmm. And the cards that you get are printed at the time you
So you
play.
Like pick an outfit with the cards that you already have.
Oh, wow.
And then you perform.
Right.
You custom yourself, your card, your clothes, and you do like a live, so like a show with the arcade. And then once you complete the show, if you do it with a friend, it'll print a card of you and your friend on the same card.
Whoa.
And you can keep that.
And they're
put
like
that
quality
in,
cards?
Yeah, they're holographic, like glitter.
Whoa.
And you put that in your little like package. I learned this in anime.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm watching the anime and they basically teach you how to play the game.
Yeah, it's blatant.
It's,
but
it's pretty illegal
smart,
in America.
Yeah.
100%
it's not like,
illegal
like the Chocobot hour.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and so in the Dragon Quest game, it's a similar system where you get a monster and then you can pose it and put it, you know, turn it around and it'll print your name on the card.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And like, we got a super rare. What is the tree, the purplish blue tree monster?
Oh, anyways, God, I don't remember his name.
We got one of those, and it said Haruki's name on it, and he was so excited about it. It's something that we'll never, ever play again. Sorry, Haruki. But it was an interesting what's going on with arcades. I actually also took him to an arcade that had retro games, and we played the Capcom Dungeons & Dragons game together.
Nice. Shadow of Asara, whatever.
He loved it.
Did he light a cigarette too, just sitting there smoking?
Give him a little ashtray.
It's not like a mall arcade or anything. Like it's like a privately owned arcade. So like there, you know, it was funny because there's like a gambling section or a fake gambling. You get medals, you know,
right?
And they had some really, really, like I don't know how old machines there. I thought they were pinball at first, but they're not. They're like these bingo machines that are shaped like pinball machines, and I. They were probably from like the 60s, I'm thinking. And it was crazy, but there's like all these old Japanese men in their like blazers, smoking, playing slot machines, and I'm just like, well, this is crazy. It's a pretty cool arcade. They also, another thing, they had a Street Fighter II Turbo machine.
Nice.
And like just hearing the attract screens from that, just walking through an arcade and hearing that, like
wave
zipped me back into like, you know, like a Mazio's Pizza.
Right.
Yeah.
How much was to play?
100 for two games.
Okay, no. If you go to Hay in Akihabara, there is actually four machines set up right next to each other in the 10-yen corner.
Wow.
No. Super Turbo for 10 yen.
Nice.
That's awesome. Basically 10 cents.
The dudes there are nuts, though, and they're all playing Sagat. So
Well, nobody was at this arcade.
Well, see, I absolutely hate smoking, but I almost will, like, I guess I will like begrudgingly make an exception for like being in an arcade and seeing someone like sitting there playing a game and smoking a cigarette because it's super nostalgic. It's very much like 20 years ago or whenever I first came to Japan, you would see that all the time. Like any arcade you went to, someone's sitting there playing a horse racing game or a soccer game or his Neo Geo bowling or whatever, and they all are smoking while they're playing.
You can still see that.
And when I was younger, I didn't care as much because, you know, when you're young, you think you're invincible and you don't give a shit or whatever. Now I absolutely detest smoking, but
just
I'm just like...
Can't breathe.
But that said, it's still like, I feel like I'm getting a taste of my childhood, so I don't mind it.
Right. The only thing I thought it was missing the pizza.
Yeah, right. And skee ball, right?
Yeah, skee ball.
Well. Yeah, when I went to, I think it's Hay. Yeah, they have some of the salarymen are sitting there, and they've played the patterns on some of these shooters, like, you know, Gradius, Nemesis, or R-Type, so many times that they're almost like not looking at the screen.
Yeah.
It's just sort of, this is the pattern that I need to do to
complete muscle memory.
Right? It's all and you know, barely moving the joystick and everything else. Like, wow,
I think that's really cool too.
If somebody's thinking about visiting Japan, Hay in Akihabara is definitely I think one of the best, absolute best arcades.
Is that H-E-Y?
H-E-Y, yeah. The Hirose Entertainment Yard. And they just have, I mean, they have a lot of the recent stuff, but they also have just crazy maniac, like you go up the first escalator on the second floor, that's where all the shooters and stuff is.
Yeah.
And you go up another floor, and it's just like, you got this whole corner of Gundam Extreme Versus.
Yep.
It's like you just got this whole half and you have this fighting games and stuff. But
yeah, so like, you know, those kind of mom and pop arcades are pretty rare even in Japan these days.
Yeah.
But it's cool to kind of go in there and kind of see that the culture still lives. I like went over to the music game corner and like saw people playing music
popping music.
Well, not even popping music. It was like all this new stuff that I had never heard about.
Some of the newer stuff.
I played this one game where it was like this touchscreen keyboard thing, but I think it was made by Sega because they had like Sega music in there. So I just played like Jet Set Radio, Virtual On, and the Offspring song from Crazy Taxi.
I thought it was Splash Wave or something.
There were a lot of them in Crazy Taxi.
But it was a weird assortment of Sega songs. Sega's
still really in there though. Like you go to arcade, they have Mai Mai as well. Like the one where it's like you're playing on a
that's the big
machine.
One right now. Mai Mai. Everybody's got their fingers
like lining up. Yeah, to play that one, right? Yeah.
What is Mai Mai?
Mai Mai is this, it's like a washing machine. It looks like a washing machine.
Yeah, you have like I want to say 8 buttons. So like 4 on each side, and then whenever a star or a button goes to one side of the screen, you just tap it where it is. And so you can hit the giant fun size buttons that are on the sides of the machine, or you can just tap on the screen. So you know somebody's really into it when they've got their gloves. Mm-hmm. So you see people walk up to them to get around friction. And so they always have their hands on the screen, and they're just flying around. It gets really nuts. But since it's a Sega game, there's all sorts of Sega music in there. Every time I play it, I usually play City Escape like twice.
Nice. So you started this whole thing talking about Dragon Quest, but did you have Dragon Quest 11 news anywhere in here?
I didn't put it in there, but we can talk about it. So Jump Festa happened last weekend.
That's right, which is early this year.
It was early.
Later in the year.
I guess it's later in the year because it's December. But
Well, no, but it's usually like the second or last weekend or the last weekend of December. Maybe because like the New Year's literally falls on a weekend this year. They did it a little bit early.
But... Right, it's a weird schedule. But they like re-unveiled Dragon Quest XI. They showed in-game footage of the PS4, 3DS versions, and then the CG intro, which introduces you to all the different characters that you're going to meet. There's a ninja girl and a ninja old man.
Yeah. It looks good.
Yeah.
You ride a horse.
You ride
PS4
a horse
ninja baby. Anyway.
I was disappointed they didn't show any combat.
Yeah, well, they've shown a little bit of combat before, actually. But yeah, it was weird. Like, I'm still... I thought I was going to come out of this really, really hyped, but I just feel the same as I did before, which is, like, I want to play the 3DS one because it's interesting. Because, like, on 3DS, you have the top screen is in 3D and the bottom screen is 2D.
It's ridiculous to see in motion.
And this time you could see, like, there are things you'll only see in 3D. Like, for example, when you break barrels and stuff, they're not in the 2D. They're only in the 3D. And I don't know what that means necessarily, but... you know, the people in the West are really hyped about the PS4 version. I'm excited too, but to me, it looks exactly like, it just looks like a prettier Dragon Quest X, which is fine, but Dragon Quest never needed, like, Unreal Engine. Like, it looks good even on Wii, you know? So, like, it already looks really good, but...
And
they're going to have an NHK special next week.
Yes, they are.
Where they're going to talk more about it, so we might actually see more about the game on that.
That's pretty exciting. It was funny, because I was watching the... footage, and I instantly thought, man, this open world looks so much better than Final Fantasy 15.
You couldn't Final go one Fantasy- episode.
I know, right?
I
love how Garnet Lee like messages us all online this morning saying, like, I'm misrepresenting the game, blah, 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 and I just responded to him with a trash emoji.
Garnet, come on the show.
Yeah,
and
man.
Yell at JJ.
Yeah.
How's the fishing in Dragon Quest?
I'm sure it's probably fun.
I'm sure Roy would like it
if
he was here.
Sorry, for Final Fantasy 15, if you like that game...
Oh my gosh, JJ!
Well, let me just... Because a lot of people were complaining... More power to you. I don't like it. Just get over it. Anyways.
Did anybody play the Nier demo?
I did.
I watched Graham play it.
Yes.
I've been away from home... all day, so it came out today, right?
In Japan, it comes out tomorrow, I guess, when this podcast comes out in America.
Yeah, it'll be out by the time you're listening to this. It's already out in Europe and Japan. Disclaimer, we worked on the game.
Yes.
Of course, we're going to say it's the best game ever, and we're going to
be... Which it is.
Which it is, yep.
It's awesome.
But actually, it's
incredible.
Really,
it's...
really good. And I don't care if you believe me or not, but like if you know me, you know that I typically will not gush about games we work on unless I actually really believe in them. But this game is good. Like, there's like different levels of platinum, right? Platinum games as a developer. There's like, you know, the Transformers platinum or whatever, or
which is a good
Legend of Korra. Well, they're the okay platinum. They're definitely like the low budget good platinum.
Transformers is an amazing game, but Legend of Korra and the TMNT game, not so much.
But the Transformers at its best is still not as good as like Bayonetta at its worst. You know what I mean? There's like levels of platinum. And like,
arguably. But I see what you're saying.
Whoa, you are not comparing Transformers to Bayonetta.
I mean,
Transformers is a really
Optimus
good game.
Transform and some of the fan service, and you're like, wow.
Yeah, but as platinum games go on their different levels, I would say, you know, my favorite platinum games are probably Bayonetta and like Metal Gear Rising. And
Wonderful 101, of course.
I like this more than both of them. And I love Bayonetta. Bayonetta is like a really special game in a lot of ways. And what it does really well, and it focuses on combat and stuff. Nier is not quite as much about combat. It's kind of a mix of exploration and combat and other things, but that said, I feel like the sum of Nier's parts is like just it's so good. Like it's really, really good.
It was already amazing with, you know, the original Nier, which had not great like moment-to-moment gameplay, because I mean the combat wasn't
well. That's been Yokosan's games have always had that problem. Exactly, like he's great ideas, great stories, great characters, and then a developer the that really just can't. Yeah. I mean, who made Dragon Guard 3? It would like
Kavya.
No,
well, Kavya's already gone.
Kavya was it was those guys who made like D3 or D4. Like they were terrible too. Basically, like the developers. Let's just face it, they're awful.
It was like a solid 12 FPS the entire time.
And now you know it. Finally, you got this like AAA level, you know, characterization and story stuff mixed with AAA developer, mixed with like Yoshida-san, the character designer, who's like, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics and like it's all this good stuff.
It's insane.
And so now the demo's out, and response has been super positive.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to see that because, like,
it's a very good representation of the game.
Mm. I think we figured out maybe 2 or 3 months ago that, like, you know what, this game is going to be awesome. And then, like, you know, but, you know, when.
I mean, once we heard who was working on it, it was like, oh, this is going to be amazing. Well, but it actually ended up being.
No, but, you know, when you get to the point when you're working on a game, you're very close to it and you can't always tell, like, you know, how things are going to be and how they're going to turn out. But we were like, we had a really good idea about it and we even started, like, talking about it. And then, like, now that the demo's out, it's the demo alone, I think, is just like, you have to try this demo. It's really fun action, really stylish, really pretty. Music is amazing.
Localization is perfect.
I was going to say that, but no, but yeah. You know, the thing about this Nier versus the last Nier, I would say, is like the first Nier is very much and people have already pointed this out online, so I'm not saying anything spoilery or new, but like the first Nier was very much a story about the characters and sort of the moment-to-moment interactions between them, right? But this one is obviously more, it's in the future, there are androids and robots and stuff. It's I think it's a little more about the sort of big picture story and the game itself than it is about like the individual characterization. Right. So like go in knowing that and understanding that, but then I think you'll really, really like the game.
I mean, also they've been this demo especially gives you a very good idea of what the combat is like, you know, what exploring an environment is like, but they haven't. There's no story yet.
There's, like...
No, yeah, little bits.
It is quite like a soap opera. I was watching you play it, and I was like, oh, the emotion, like, what am I watching, like, Grey's Anatomy? Like, what is happening here?
It's like we've known each other for 5 minutes, and we're in love, and we're it's terrible love. To see you go.
Yeah. There's a lot they haven't shown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So please check it out. It's on PSN now. It's free, and the actual game comes out in March, and we worked really hard on it last year, a lot of us. Yeah. So, well, this year actually. But
And Roy's not here. He did
yeah.
A lot
Roy's
of it.
Been Roy's. Roy knows that game probably better than anyone on the planet right now. Literally.
So check it out. Get it on the store. It's free. Just download it.
I've been playing another game too that we can only tease. Now we can't talk about it. But I will say that we're working on some cool shit. Actually, you guys have been too. We've been working on some really cool shit for next year. So. Look forward to...
Please be excited,
yeah. Project V is one of them, and the other one, I don't even know what we'll call that, Project W, maybe.
Yeah.
We got to come up with some new letters, but...
There's
running out of letters.
So many letters.
Yeah.
2017 is going to be a good year.
It will be, and... But let's talk a little about... We're getting a little long on the tooth, but let's talk about 2016 briefly.
Hold on, actually, before you do that, there's a game that Steven's been playing that I really want to hear about.
Yes. All right, I'll make it real quick.
Make it quick.
Okay. My Horse Prince.
Oh, my gosh. This is going to be quick. Let's talk about this.
No, so you're a woman, and you're dating a horse that has a human head.
Yes.
Only visible
to her.
Only visible to her.
Because it's just a horse.
So it is a horse, and the guy's like, yeah, some women are weird. Like, literally, the text is, some women are weird, and they can see human faces. And
on
so,
horses.
Yeah, and
is it a Japanese game? Or?
It's got to be Japanese. I mean, it's in English.
Mobile, right? It's a mobile game.
It's mobile, and it is available in the U.S. App Store.
Okay, guys,
My Horse Prince. And it is the craziest thing I've ever played. I mean,
do you find yourself looking at horses in a different light?
You know, there is some dreamy sparkles every once in a while when I say,
"Oh,
so is it like a dating game?" Or?
Yeah, it's a dating game, right? It's like kind of a hot up full boyfriend, but like it's a horse.
So are there multiple horses?
I think so. Right now, I just have the one, and he's trying to make me breakfast, and so he's chopping up onions for my miso soup
with his hooves,
and a knife, and so. There's a line of dialogue where she says, like, he's cutting the onions on the floor, but that's okay. And then what happens is to regain energy for him, he asks you a question. He's like, do you like dogs or cats? And then the answer is like dog, cat, horse.
Yeah.
Right? And so
are you supposed to say horse?
When you say horse, he says, "Oh, I asked you about dogs or cats," and gets sad and loses energy.
So
they totally trick you.
You're being too obvious about your feelings.
And so there's all like, "Hey, do you want to go? You know, go to a movie theater?" And he's like, "I'm a horse. I can't fit in the movie theater."
How do you meet your horse?
Yeah. Well, so you go to the stable and you're
of course you. Do.
Of course you. Where else would you meet your horse? And then I think you're just kind of there to look and.
So just look at the horses.
Yeah, yeah. Just like
look
at the horses.
So going into this, you're already a horse girl.
Yeah.
We all know one.
Yes. Right, right. So. Yeah, and then you know, some magic happens, and you connect with this horse, and, you know, he's all dreamy. Like, there's, I think the screenshots tell it, it's like her, and then the horse is, like, leaning up against her with his, like, hoof on the wall. where it's like, "Hey, can you calm down a little and lower the hoof?" Right?
Right.
Like, that's the text. And
his name isn't Mr. Ed or anything like that?
No. I don't know if he has a name. I had to give myself a name, but I don't know if
And where did you find out about this game?
I found out about it on Twitter. Someone posted a picture of the horse with a human head. I'm like, what is
and
that
game? And
it's
literally, like, it's the neck of a horse.
It's not a centaur, right?
This is
like, full horse body, just the head.
Just the head is a human.
Man.
It is like a terrible Photoshop of someone's like, "I just put the face."
Stick it on there. I mean, it is free to play, but like one of the buy-in items is like a coin doubler, effectively, like it's an XP doubler. So I don't think it's gonna be awful on the free to play side, but at least like start it to just see what it is, and then you can show it to all your friends.
What is it,
like,
My Horse Prince?
Horse Prince in the U.S. I don't know what it is in Japan. But.
I couldn't find it in the Japanese store, but that's fine. Most of our listeners
there's probably
not
a name for it.
It's probably
anyway.
Uma Ujisama or something like that. Yeah.
All right, and I know we got to get on to the next thing, and we will, but real quick, Graham, aren't you playing Prince Kawazu's latest? Speaking of horse princes.
I wasn't sure I'd get to talk about it, but
you can talk about it for like 2 minutes. Go.
Saga Scarlet Graces, just so everybody knows where I'm coming from, my favorite Saga game is Saga Frontier 2.
Okay, so you like the terrible ones.
Oh, my God, what are you saying?
Snap.
Damn.
So, I mean, just for this one, I think this is a very accessible Saga game. For people that, you know, have maybe tried it before and thought, like,
it just came out on Vita in Japan.
On the Kawazu scale, it's, like,
very
mild Kawazu.
Yeah. I'd say, like, somebody probably, like, had him locked down the entire time.
Yeah. Okay.
But how it basically is, like, it starts off with, like, an ogre battle style. It asks you about your personality. So here's a bunch of questions, like, you know, it's the night before battle. What do you pray for? And then it assigns you one of many characters, and you play through their scenario.
What did you get?
Interesting.
I got Urupino.
What does that mean?
And she's, like, she's the princess of a kingdom. And
so that's your personality.
I guess so.
You're a princess.
Yeah, that's
princess
me.
Graham.
You're a pretty princess.
Defines me very well.
Graham.
And just how the scenario works is very disjointed, obviously, because it's Saga. Like, you just have this giant map, and it's like a storybook where things pop up in the environment when you get closer to them. So as you walk close to, like, a manor or a castle, it'll just pop up, and you can visit and talk to one person, and something might happen or it might not, and then you walk away. And so they're all
amazing. Amazing.
And so basically, like, you walk into an area, and maybe a side quest will start, but it'll give you no indication about what's happening or what to do next.
You're really selling this.
Are you sure this is a minor?
No, see, I'm describing this, and this is, by Kawazu standards, this is extremely accessible. But, like, you basically just, like, feel out the world as you're walking through it. There's all these things going on. You're not really,
Is it an RPG?
It's an RPG.
Is it, like, a traditional turn-based RPG, or...?
I mean, it's like Saga Frontier 2. I mean, it's how it works, but the combat is actually really fun. So you have a whole bunch of characters on your team, and like always, they have HP and LP.
Yeah.
And so if you lose all your HP, you lose an LP.
Yeah.
If you lose all your LP, that character's
gone.
Out.
Yeah.
They don't die forever in this game anymore, which is, you know, too bad. But combat is really fun because basically it shows you where on, like, a continuum your character will act. And so you have some fast characters and some slow characters, and the enemies will, you know, enter between them. And so you can coordinate your attacks with your team members to sort of act between other enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you get into the combat, it gets really involved. And there's a lot of things you can do to maybe delay your attack or speed it up. And you can activate huge combo attacks where all of your people attack someone together. So the combat, I think, is probably, like, the biggest selling point for me.
Sounds
so far.
A little like Grandia, am I thinking of it?
Except it's not active.
Okay.
Grandia is an active one. So, I mean, you could actually, like, attack enemies and that would delay their bar. But for this one, like, you're going to be acting at this time. And if you coordinate your attacks well, kill enemies with the right combinations of people, you can, you know, activate chain attacks.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
And it's really, really cool. So, I mean, if you can get used to how strange and disjointed the story is put together.
Yeah.
But, I mean, also, it's a Square game. The graphics and the music are incredible.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, it's another Ito Kenji soundtrack.
Oh, wow.
So it's absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you can, you know, get over that hump of, like, I have no idea what to do ever, and I'm just dying. I think you're going to have a lot of fun.
Sounds it's a pretty big hump. But
all right. I've played games a lot, so I'm all about
it. I want to hear more after you've played, like, more about it. I want to know,
like,
where
it ends
up. Yeah,
I'm only, like, 5 hours in, but
okay.
It's great so far.
All right.
That's going to be my playing game.
You wrote Saga, JJ, but I thought you were writing sad.
Sad. It's pretty much the same.
So 2016, what was everybody's favorite games? Let's go.
Oh, God.
Games of the year.
Okay, I'll start it off. So, Roy gave me his list, and I'm only going to read the games that I also agree with. So, Final Fantasy 15, no longer on Roy's list.
Boom.
Oh, but we really liked Stardew Valley.
Yes.
Stardew Valley was an early game.
Is that out yet on consoles?
It is.
It just came out.
Still amazing. The best, like, farming, the best replacement for Harvest Moon I ever needed.
Yeah.
It's the only game I need, the only game I want.
The first Harvest Moon, like, I've ever played, I ended up falling in love with the game. Played it a whole bunch, mm-hmm. thanks to Sarah who introduced me to it. It probably would also be on one of my favorite games in 2016.
Mm-hmm. I want to play it. I'll play it on PS4, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was a buck 70 short. My balance in my PSN account.
Oh, yeah, because you're Canadian. You're a dirty Canadian.
Yikes.
I've heard enough people say I definitely want to try it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to be prepared to lose your life to it, is what
I've heard.
Oh, okay, no, maybe not.
When you started playing Stardew Valley, I gave up 2 days. I gave up my weekend. Yeah. I didn't want to do anything else. I didn't want to even eat. I didn't want to leave my desk. I just wanted to play Stardew Valley.
You wake up at 9 a.m. on a Saturday, and then it's Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens.
This goes for me, I mean, Doom. Country Mall.
They won a bunch of stuff. It was like the Game Awards.
So
I
really want to play that.
Yeah, as soon as like the credits are rolling, and all I can think about is I want to play this again. I want to restart it right now.
Yeah, that's one of those games that the Steam sales this weekend. I hopefully it's in a good price range because I'm totally gonna buy that. I built a new PC.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Now with like a great graphics card and everything.
Welcome.
It's so nice to be back.
Welcome to the land of PC players.
Yeah. Sorry, all my Jewish relatives. Part of the master race now.
Nice.
Hey, you
should cut that out.
Nice.
No, it's fine. I'm a Jew. It's okay. Yeah. So the Steam sale, I'm gonna finally be able to play a lot of the Western third-party next-gen, current-gen titles that I missed because a lot of them don't really... I mean, they'll come out here, but limited runs or not at all. And Doom was one of those games. I don't even know if it came out here.
It did.
It did. Yeah. Okay, yeah. But still...
Oh, I want to borrow it then. I want to play it.
Yeah. It's one of those things I really want to play. I downloaded the demo. I was like, oh my God, I really want to play this. But
yeah.
So you really liked it.
It's definitely my game of the year.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, so that's the one there's a bunch of other games that are on my list.
Yeah, why don't you tell us some of the ones?
One thing I thought was really cool about Doom is, like, obviously it has lots of difficulty levels mm-hmm. available from the beginning, and I thought the skill curve in that game was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, I usually like to try to play games on the hardest difficulty every time, so I start on the hardest difficulty, and, like, when you first start Doom, you're really sluggish because you don't know the engine yet.
Right.
But as soon as you finish, like, a run of the game on a lower difficulty, you are ready for the next one, whatever it is. Like, because you can control your character so well.
Well, you just recognize, oh, okay, like, here's how I would do this more efficiently.
And enemy behaviors.
Right, yeah.
As soon as you get in there, like, you know all the enemies, you know what they're going to do, so you can plan your approach better.
It's just a very engaging experience. There was times where I could not stop playing it.
And
that's like it forces aggression, right? There's a lot of, like, you know, cover based shooters and everything else. You have to get in there. Yeah. Like, you're out of health, go. And so,
Doom and Doom 2 were very much like that, right? I mean, they kind of felt like, you know, almost like you were playing a sport or something. You know,
it's like, if you're not moving forward.
Like, the first FPS I've really enjoyed a lot since Quake 3 Arena.
Yeah.
Because it's just so fast.
Yeah.
And I can't get enough of that.
On the opposite end, I also really like The Witness.
The Witness, okay. Yeah. That is another game that I, like, I'm hoping to buy this weekend.
That'll let me down. But,
really?
But I think I'm probably more in the minority. I think more people liked it than didn't like it.
Yeah, some people were, like, talking about it like it was a religious experience.
How I recommend The Witness is if you have a significant other, like, the couch co-op, like, aspect of that is really cool.
Because, probably not a game you want to play with your kids, I'm guessing.
Probably not. It gets pretty complicated.
It requires patience.
Yeah, well, complicated's probably not.
Well, it requires patience for sure. But there's times where, you know, like, you know, I would be on a couch or you know, my partner would be on the couch, and then one of us would be at the TV, kind of like, oh, this is what you need to do, right? Or I think this is what we need to do. And that was actually a really fun experience. But I liked the puzzles and... I found that overall to be a really good experience. Res Infinite, was amazing.
Awesome.
And there's the disclaimer for you guys.
Mark.
But
how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Yeah, I mean, PSVR.
Yeah, What did you guys think of VR Gunnen, the first year of VR?
I mean, VR in general is super exciting this year, but it's more like it felt like the minus 1 year of VR. I feel like we haven't really actually started yet, but.
Still like super hot and stuff like that coming out later, like later on in the year, and then the PSVR launching, like Thumper, I thought was also really good.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of VR stuff, and then In terms of games that I played a ton of, Pokemon Go.
Yeah, actually, if I think about it, I played Pokemon Go more than anything else this year.
Yeah.
For me, it was Overwatch.
Partly because it's accessible, right? You know, you could play it anywhere.
You can go anywhere you
want. I still didn't get a Santa Pikachu. Did you guys?
We did. We got one in the office.
We did not all get a Pokemon Santa Pikachu in this office. Because you know what? I loaded up my game for the first time in months.
Yeah.
Graham had already caught his. JJ caught his, and guess who didn't get one? Me.
Sorry,
I don't.
So I didn't get one yet either.
I basically just uninstalled that fucking game. It is trash.
Don't do that.
It is trash.
Yeah. I got to get two because you can evolve it into Santa Raichu. So I need like both of them.
They need more than a Santa hat, Pikachu to get me back.
Is it a new entry in the Pokedex or is it not?
It's just Pikachu.
The Santa Chu.
It was my first.
What
Pikachu.
Did you expect?
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, so were you guys there was Overwatch.
Yes, we were.
Overwatch. Probably my most played game of the year.
Definitely Sarah's.
I don't know. Is it tied with Snow? Wait. Yeah. No. I definitely played that way more.
Yeah.
I know life to Overwatch.
I probably have watched and played more Overwatch than any game since like World of Warcraft. Via
it's addicting.
Haruki always it's playing
that
it.
Blizzard addicting.
Yeah.
Especially when you play with other people.
Right.
You all kind of enable each other.
We haven't done that
yet.
And
then you slowly spiral into this, like, now we're a pro team.
I guess we're pros now. Let's see. What other games? What other games did Roy have?
Oh, Let It Die.
Let It Die. That's a surprise entry. I think I knew he would like
that game.
Okay,
but Roy just, picked the past, like, the most recent. He picked Pokemon.
Right. That's true.
Final Fantasy XV and Let It Die. Roy, you can't just pick.
Right.
He picked Stardew Valley.
But that's because of
me. I'm going to defend Roy.
One of my games of the year that was at the beginning of the year, Dragon Quest Builders.
Mm.
Nice. That's a good one.
That was easily in my top five.
That was this year, huh?
Yeah, that was this year. It came out at like February or something like that.
There was a strategy guide for that, so I bought it. I own like every Dragon Quest strategy guide ever in English, and I saw it. I was like, okay. Also, Dragon Quest VII. I know you guys didn't play it, but I played a bunch of Dragon Quest VII. Finally came out in English. That was really good.
My game of the year, Dark Souls 3.
Really?
Nice. March release. Yeah, no, I was kind of tempted to go with The Last Guardian because it was so recent and fresh in my mind.
Definitely
Dark Souls 3. I just felt like it was the perfection of the formula. Everything came together so well. They've got their boss
fights.
Some of
those boss fights were so good. Yeah.
They're so good at snow environments now, man.
Yeah.
The Boreal Valley was just incredible.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, like, it's easy to dismiss Dark Souls 3 because I think everybody had fatigue.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you really look back at it, it is like you said, it is the mastery of that formula.
They pulled together.
The boss fights are just
so
incredible.
Well.
I
finally managed to get. I mean, I haven't played a whole lot of it, but I understand the PvP is a lot better. So if you're into that aspect of it as well,
there's like group PvP and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot to enjoy there. But
wasn't Mario Maker this year or was that last year?
I think that was last year.
Oh, was that last year?
3DS was this year.
That's okay. Yeah, it's hard to tell because for me, a lot of the stuff I played this year was stuff that we're working on. So right. I mean, if I were to like pick the game I played the most, it's like. It's not even announced yet. So it's like, that's not, right. I mean, that kind of sucks. I'm not saying that because like, oh, look, we play. It's more like, oh, I wish I had stuff I could talk about for this year. But like when you have limited time to play games and you have to play them for work, you end up playing the work ones more,
Yeah.
Why not? The other games I had listed were stuff like Hitman was really good. Darkest Dungeon, Firewatch. And
oh,
Ports
Darkest
of
Dungeon.
Oh, Firewatch is awesome. Yeah. I love Firewatch.
That won a lot of awards
so those
too.
Were all this year.
Wow, yeah, Darkest Dungeon was probably pretty early too, right?
Yeah, well, it was because of the Kickstarter stuff.
Yeah,
right?
It was like early access too.
Probably been playing
too.
Beta, early access and everything. So
that came out on PS4 recently too. I'd like to play that there. But yeah, so 2016 overall.
Pretty good year.
Yeah, it was all right.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel like we're headed for an amazing 2017. Mm-hmm.
2017
so
is
cool
going to
be
incredible.
We got Switch. Mm-hmm.
Switch.
That's
speaking of Switch, we may be back. Well, we have... So, okay, let's talk about one little news item before we go on. 2016 was great. Anybody else have any games they want to talk about?
The game I played the most was Street Fighter V.
Street Fighter V.
But I'm still very disappointed in Street
Fighter
V. Okay, so...
Come on, Capcom.
Let's talk a little about... There was a little bit of a leak, or supposedly...
A little bit of a leak? Like, that ship is sunk. There's so many leaks in it.
All
of
them. This one is probably the most disappointing of all of the leaks. It's about the CPU and GPU clock speeds. And none of us are like tech people, so we won't get into it. Well, maybe Steve, are you?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, the gist of it is that the CPU and the GPU are clocked a little bit lower than people were anticipating, based on the architecture
that was rumored to be in the Switch, which is the Tegra X1.
So how is it, just like, for a layman, how is it relative to the Wii U?
So,
because I expect it to be like a portable Wii U.
That's a hard question to answer because
it's different architecture.
Yeah, it's different architecture. If you're talking about like just, you know, raw pixel pushing power, yeah, it's probably around the same. But the chips and the architecture and stuff like that, the bandwidth is faster. Okay. There are more modern shaders and features, and I don't know.
There's some things they can do better. Like, it all depends on what they're giving folks for development tools, quite frankly. I mean, Unity, we know, is something that you can't
use. Right, and apparently Unreal 4.
And Unreal as well.
Wait, you can't use either of those?
No, you can't.
Oh, you can't. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Cool.
So
I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And so, Nintendo, for a long time, actually didn't give very great development tools for folks. Right. So actually, a lot of games.
And Michael Pachter today was like, Nintendo Switch is going to be easier to develop than all the other ones. And I'm like, what the fuck? What jumped into Michael Pachter to say something nice about Nintendo?
Right. but yeah, this is all because of the portability, right?
Right.
And so the fact that it actually it underclocks itself or downclocks itself when you pull it out of the dock is not new. I mean, laptops do that.
Right.
Even your phone and tablets do that.
Yeah. And they're doing it basically because the resolution goes from rumored 1080p to 720p.
Right.
And the difference between the clock speeds for the GPU plugged in and then on battery are roughly the same difference as what you would need to run a 720p to a 1080p.
And people are going to be doing the thing where one person's playing it on handheld mode and one's on TV and like, look at all the differences in frames. It's like, when you're playing it, hopefully you don't notice, but...
Right, you know. Hopefully you don't. And like, it'd be cool if like, you could buy a second Switch and plug it in and then be playing it like both. You could have it in your hand and you have one plugged in too for like ultimate. Maybe that's how they're gonna get you. You could just keep
double
plugging
switch.
In switches until you have like
get
tons switch. Of power.
Sonic and Knuckles, just keep piling them up.
Frank and Sega.
Was it Brandon Sheffield who like basically tried to stack as many Sonic and Knuckles as possible? I think he got up to like 25 or something like that. Like
that should be like
a
part of the awesome games done quick, just to see who can stack as many.
Well, it just starts glitching. Like the game just starts becoming this
weird
thing. Like it's on the internet somewhere. Someone just
all right.
A bunch
and the reason I brought this up is that our next episode will either be in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Depending, we have a vacation.
Are we gonna have this conversation now?
Well, we'll decide it later.
We'll figure it out.
We have a vacation, and our next episode comes out during that vacation. But very next week is the big Switch conference on Friday at 1 o'clock Japan time, and I think we should probably cover that.
we'll figure something out
because I'm not coming in during the holiday.
We'll
if
there's no podcast in 2 weeks, blame JJ.
You'll live. that's basically it.
Cool.
Yeah, we're kind of in a rush. We have to get out of here. There's holiday things to do. It's the end of the year. JJ has to like literally edit the podcast as soon as we're done here because he doesn't have to, but he volunteered to, which is really cool. But tomorrow's a holiday in Japan.
And what holiday is it, John?
Emperor's birthday.
Yeah,
or something.
Happy birthday, Mr. Emperor.
Happy birthday, Emperor.
Almost the same as Jesus, but you know what? We can't all be Jesus.
And then we still work a little bit next week, but then the holiday actually kicks off for us, and then we're gone for a couple of weeks. So the timing is a little weird, but we'll figure something out. But nonetheless, thanks as always for listening.
Yes.
Throughout this year and years past, we're getting up there in years. What is it, like 5 years now, 6 years? We've been doing this for a while now.
It's been a while.
It's been a long while.
The years? I was trying to
think of like, so we're on episode 171. And that's every 2 weeks.
So we do about 25. I don't know. We've been doing this a long time. But anyway, that's actually a lot of episodes. We've been doing this longer than I realized.
Yeah.
But hopefully you guys
still
enjoy the show.
We're just realizing our own mortality right now on the podcast.
Where can they find us, JJ?
They can find us on our website, 8-4.jp, which is sorely needing a renewal. On our second home, giantbomb.com. A thread will be on NeoGAF at some point. You can also find us on iTunes, and we have a Facebook, and then we have a Twitter at 84play.
Timely Howard.
At Stephen P. Lynn.
John TV.
Sarah Pods.
And I'm SBRSK. You can also find Steve and Frank Svaldi's gamehistory.org on the internet.
Yes.
Go there.
Gamehistory.org on Twitter. Yes.
Gamehistory.org.
Or also follow Frank Svaldi as well on Twitter. Yep. Yeah.
And that's it.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy holidays. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
Merry Kuri.
Kwanzaa. Whatever else. There's a bunch of things out there.
Yo-Yo Toshio.
Yo-Yo Toshio. We'll see y'all in January.
Yeah.
We'll see you on the other side.
Who's going to take us out? Everybody looks at Steve.
Well, I was just going to say, fuck 2016. What a shitty year. What a piece of shit.
It was a shit-ass shit year, wasn't
what
it?
What a fucking piece of shit year.
I graduated in 2016. I got a job in 2016.
Yeah, good things happened in 2016.
To me,
but the general balance of the universe was upended.
We jumped in 2016.
I know, right? Stop hating
people are gonna look people are going to look back at 2016 and be like, what the fuck were they thinking?
Well, that's the
assholes.
Thing. In history, 50 years from now, 2016 was the year everything went to shit. And hopefully 2017 was the year it got back on track and not the year it got worse
now
and World War III started.
Now you're just going to jinx
I'm not, I don't believe in that. No jinxing. We got to make it better ourselves.
That's right.
We're going to make it better.
We'll try
That's
harder.
Right.
Everyone try harder.
We'll fight hard.
Try harder.
For victory.
Good night.
Happy New Year.
Mini Kitty.
In a dream I could see you are not far away. Anytime, any place, I can see your face. You're that special one that I've been waiting for, and I hope you're looking for someone like me.
In my dreams I can hear you calling me in the night. Everything is so sweet in your eyes. I feel there's so much inside. Oh yeah.
In the night, dream delight, I want to see you standing there. In the night, dream delight, I found someone who really cares. Bum, 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 bum. In a dream we can do everything we'll want to. There's nowhere I'd rather be but here with you. The stars above light the way only for you and I. I'm so glad I found the one I've been looking for.
Keep the dream. Just be strong, and you're sure to
find the one. In the night, in delight, I want to see you standing there. In the night, I found someone who really cares. In the night, dream delight, I want to see you smile again. In the night, dream delight, you are the one I've waited for.